I'm Phil Nasons.
And I'm Zach Zander.
And we want to welcome you to the Cleveland Sports Report. How y'all doing today? Welcome to the Cleveland Sports Report. My name is Phil Nasons. I am the co-host, along with my friend Zach Zander, and we're going to bring you nothing but Cleveland sports. And it's a great time to be a sports fan in Cleveland, isn't it, Zach?
Oh, absolutely. Can you believe it? Next Tuesday, October 25th, they're going to have the ring ceremony for the Cleveland Cavaliers, LeBron James. They're going to unleash the banner, and on the same night, the World Series, Game 1. We don't know who they're going to play yet, but couldn't you think of a more exciting day in Cleveland sports?
I can't think of one. Winning the championship last year was a fantastic thing for them. But you know something? I got to have this funny feeling that there's going to be a conflict there. People are angry that the Cavs are playing in the World Series, in the NBA Finals, and the Tribe is playing Game 1 of the World Series in the same place at the same time.
Well, there's Cleveland fans. They've been waiting for a day like this for 50 years, and then they almost have to share it. I mean, the Cavs fans have to share it with the Indians fans, and I almost think that a lot of people are going to have tickets for both. They're going to watch the ring ceremony, and then they're going to scoot over across the street and try to get in there for Game 1 of the World Series, which I think I'd rather be at Game 1, but wow, what a night.
What a night. I think it's going to be a fantastic evening. Let's talk about the Tribe. What a win. What a performance against the Blue Jays. I got to tell you, I was a little surprised. I thought that the Blue Jays would give up or put up more of a fight, but Jose Bautista, what a mouth. What a mouth. And he got sat down, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. We shut him down 3-0 to clinch the pennant. And, we shut down their bats. Postseason baseball is really about pitching before the hitting. It's clutch hitting, but it's knockdown pitching. It's starting pitching. It's relievers, closers. And, hey, Terry Francona, he's locked in. He knows who to put in. And, oh, my God, I mean, it worked.
It really did. And it was a surprise to me because Toronto mashes hitters. Mashes pitchers. They mash everybody. And Cleveland, let's face it, outside of Corey Kluber, who knows who these pitchers are? Outside of diehard Cleveland fans, who knows these people? Nobody.
I agree. And with the injuries, it just makes it that much more of a remarkable story. I mean, we had Cleveland media thrown us, after Carrasco got hurt, threw us out the window, said our season's over. And you know what? That's why I love Jason Kipnis. He came out and said, hey, if you think our season's over, stop coming to the ballpark. But we're going to keep playing, and guess what? We're going to win. Hey, we got the pennant. Next is the World Championship ring.
And that's what's coming next, man. Two parades in 1 year. Two parades. Who would have thunk that one?
Can you believe it?
I can't believe it.
Without one in 52 years, and then we do back-to-back within 4 or 5 months, it's amazing. It's a great time in Cleveland sports. I mean, Cleveland is really the best sports city. I'm so glad to be on this show to talk it. I mean, the passion that the fans have, they deserve a winner, and they got one in June, and we have a chance to get one in the end of October and early November. It's just amazing, and you know what? This, not to get off baseball or anything, the Browns might be struggling, but if you have two of the best organizations and maybe one that's going to be up and coming in a couple years, it's something to really, you know, hold your hat on, and it's just a really exciting time.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, that's for sure. I love talking Cleveland sports, and it's going to be a lot of fun, but this World Series, that's going to be different, man. That's going to be exciting, but it's going to be different because, like you said, pitching wins these things in the playoffs. And let's face it, Cleveland does not have the sexiest pitchers out there, do they? They're not the sexiest choices anyway.
Well, not starting pitching. You got us there. Kluber, he's an ace of ace. We're going to get him out in Game 1. Game 1's going to be huge. Every game that Kluber is in is almost worth two because we have to get wins the day that he jumps on the mound. Now, number two, is Bauer going to be out there? Is his hand going to be healed, or is it going to be Tomlin? I'm not sure which way they're leaning, but whichever one it is, the opposite's going to probably pitch Game 3, and then we're going to hope to get Kluber back out there. So, Francona, I believe in Francona. You really do. You got to put everything on him. I think he was kind of in the Red Sox heads a little bit, and you know, because he was the former manager over there and won two championships for him, and the Blue Jays – I mean, we've had some knock-it-out games with them this year. We had the big, long, I think, 19-inning game in June. And, you know, pitching beats hitting, and our pitching beat their great hitting.
Andrew Miller, one save, four holds, 11.2 innings pitched, 21 strikeouts. That says it all right there. The best bullpen in baseball took care of business when it needed to most. Well done, boys, and a great move by Terry Francona when he put Andrew Miller in that ball game in the sixth inning. That was a key move in this series, and it was all over after that. No one can touch Miller. Nobody.
Absolutely not. And almost when we acquired Miller, I was very excited, like every other Cleveland Indians fan was. And then I was wondering, how is he going to use him? I thought he was going to come in, bump Cody Allen out, and he was going to be the save artist, the closer. And that's not how he's been used, but it's worked. He comes in the hard spots in the sixth and seventh inning, and he long relieves for two innings. So, you know, getting two innings out of a great pitcher is just as good as, you know, the closer coming in and finishing the game. Those seventh and eighth innings are just as big as the ninth inning to me. He comes in and oh my, he's looking as good as any reliever I've seen in recent history.
A lot better than Jose Mesa.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
my God, 1997, I was on the phone with my best friend. I was living in Las Vegas, and we watched Game 7 together, and it was horrific. Jose Mesa, forget about it. We don't have a Jose Mesa on this team this year, do we?
Absolutely not.
Let's hope not, anyway.
No way.
I mean, let's hope not, anyway, because you never know, right?
You never know, but, I mean, Cody Allen likes to make it interesting, you might want to say. But
interesting is an understatement.
Absolutely. You know, if he has his command, his stuff is A+ when he has his command. If he's throwing the ball all around, he's going to get people on base, and that's when bad things can happen in key situations. So if he keeps his command, I like him. I love his stuff. I really do, and I think Francona does too. That's why he's kept him in that closer role. It's just he's got to keep his emotions and keep his control. He throws strikes, we're going to get people out, and we're going to win the ballgame.
Well, let's hope anyway. I hope for the best for the Cleveland Indians. You know, if they play the Cubs, it's going to be a fun series because Cubs fans don't believe in their team either. They pretend to, but there's a curse there. I believe there's a curse there. Some team, some home fan base is going to be very happy when that World Series is over because the curse for whoever will be lifted.
Absolutely, and the Cubs might be the better team than the Dodgers, but I really do want to see us play the Cubs just because I think it's going to be an epic World Series. It's going to be a World Series that you're going to remember, just not locally, but nationally. It's going to be the curse of the Cubs, who haven't won it since 1906, and then the Indians, who haven't won it in 70-plus years. Somebody's going to break the curse, and it's going to be just an amazing atmosphere at both ballparks. And it's just going to be really fun. The Cubs just won two games in a row. They're up 3-2. They're going back home. I think they're going to pull it out. So I think it is going to be the Cubbies, but we're not sure yet. It's going to be an amazing time. And if it's the Cubs at Cleveland, game one Tuesday night, the same time as this ring ceremony, it's going to be a special night.
Well, I don't care about the ring ceremony. I just want to watch my Knicks play the Cavs because I'm a Knicks fan, as you know. But I'm a Cavs fan, too, because I live here. And I've been watching them for 100 years, you know, so it's great. But I've always been a Knicks fan. That's going to be a fun game, too. But I would prefer them not to play the Cubs only because it's going to be freaking cold in Chicago.
Absolutely. Chicago.
The Windy City is going to be arctic wind. Maybe the Browns should go up there and play.
The Windy City is going to be much cooler than South California. So I'm with you on that, but the atmosphere, the Cubs, the Indians, over 170 years combined without a championship with those two teams that play every year. February, pitchers and catchers report. You know, they're playing spring training games every single year. Think for over 100 years without winning a title in Cleveland since the 40s. And one of them's going to do it, and it's going to be Cleveland. I have hope. Sorry, Chicago. It's going to be another year that Billy Goat, but you're going to go down if you get past L.A. There's still some games to play there.
Yeah, you know what, though? When you look at this team, this Cleveland Indians team, did you think for a second, would you have thought for a second that Lonnie Chisenhall would be leading this team in offensively.
Absolutely not.
Most people thought he was going to get cut in spring training.
Yeah, a lot of people thought he was going to get moved or cut. And, you know, this team, one of the most remarkable things about it is they're without their best player, Michael Brantley.
Who? I forgot who he played. Does he play for the Indians? Yeah. I don't think so.
Not in 2016, but that
he's not playing next year either. Half the year he's gone.
Wow, that club just, the ball club rallied around itself. They rallied around their manager. And you know what? They were always on the up and up. Whenever, you know, Brantley got hurt, they didn't make it a big deal. They just went out there and played ball. When Salazar was going through what he was going through, they just went out there and played ball. Carrasco gets hurt. Hey, next man up. Let's go out there and play ball, have a little fun, and guess what? We're going to win some ball games. And they went out and proved that.
Yeah, they sure did. I'm really thrilled to be here watching them, too, honestly. I didn't think that Cleveland would get this far. I thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season. I thought it was going to be the White Sox. I thought it would have been their year. It wasn't. Rajay Davis was a great pickup this year. People thought that was a dumb move, and he led the American League in stolen bases. I'm going to tell you right now, Francona is a genius. He's made every move correct. He moved Lonnie Chisenhall out to right field. He brought Jose Ramirez in to play third. Jose Ramirez should be a MVP candidate, but nobody even knows who he is. I played on radio with fantasy experts who didn't know what position he played.
Well, to start the season, his bat came out. They were moving him around a little bit. He was a utility player, and I really liked him, and he always puts the bat on the ball. He always hits the ball hard somewhere, maybe not with amazing power, but he has power. I mean, he had a great doubles number, I believe. What was it, in the 40s, I believe? He had 40 or so doubles. Comes out there, plays a good third base once Uribe got sent out of town, and he came in there and he took that position, and there he is, third base. He plays it well, he fields it well, and he goes out there and plays tough, and he's a smart player. I love the way he runs the bases. I mean, best average on the team. I mean, what's not to like about the young player?
Well, there's nothing not to like. If you're a fantasy player next year, you better grab him in the third round or he won't be there in your draft, and I don't care how big that draft is. And if he is there at that period of time, you should win your league. That's what I have to say. But, you know, there's somebody that never gets talked about on this team, and I think that they should, and that's Roberto Perez. That guy got big home runs this year. He didn't hit that many of them, but every one of them mattered. He's calling great ball game after great ball game after great ball game. Look at the game he called the other night in the clincher. That was a masterful job when that kid walked off the mound when Francona yanked him. Who was the first person to clap? It was Roberto Perez. Well done, he said. Well done. He kept saying, well done, bravo. That's the kind of catcher we need for any team. And no one talks about him either. He's not the sexiest choice out there. Everyone wanted to see Yan Gomes. But I forgot Yan Gomes was on the team until I saw him running out there to cheer and get hugged. I forgot half these guys were on the team. It's amazing what Francona's done. Francona should be the manager of the year this year.
Oh, and I believe he will. And there's not enough things you can say about Perez. A lot of stuff doesn't show up in the newspaper the next day on the numbers. You know, his average wasn't great. He was clutch with the home runs, definitely in the postseason. But the way a catcher can handle a pitcher, there's not enough things to say about it, even if you don't see it in the stat sheet. The way he handles, you know, the relievers, the starters, the different situations that happen. I mean, nobody's out there running on him. I mean, he's great behind the plate. He's not getting past balls. And he's a team guy. He goes out there and just tries so hard, and he has the respect of the other players on the team, and he definitely has the respect of his manager. The fans love him. And, hey, I was one of those guys that, hey, I think we need Yan Gomes out there for a better bat. I wanted us to make a trade at the trade deadline that, you know, didn't happen. But he's came out there, been clutch in the playoffs, and the way our pitching staff is playing with him, there's not enough things to be said about it, because at the end of the day, pitching wins championships in Major League Baseball.
Absolutely. You know, another thing people aren't talking about much, and perhaps they should be, this team, this defense, 288 chances, just one error in the playoffs. One error, that's a 99% fielding percentage. That is key. Great pitching and great defense. That's what wins baseball championships. Plus timely hitting, The Indians have put together all three. They need to do it four more times.
The fundamentals of the game, Phil. It's, you know, pitching, hitting, fielding. Make the plays that you're supposed to make. Don't do nothing crazy. Don't do nothing extra. Just do your job. If you're in center field, play center field. Shortstop, play shortstop. And they go out there. They I can't say it enough. They rally around each other, and they love to play with each other. The enthusiasm they have just to hang out with each other, it's great to see. It makes me want to go out there and find my old baseball buddies, throw the ball around, smile, and, you know, have a great time. They honestly look like they're having fun. When you look at the Toronto Blue Jays, they weren't having fun. I mean, they were losing. It's never fun to lose, but they didn't have the same look on their faces in the first inning, let alone the seventh and eighth inning. The Indians legitimately have fun playing with each other, and it's just a great watch.
Well, the Toronto Blue Jays looked awkward. It's always awkward when your foot is firmly planted in your mouths. What a bunch of trash-talking, empty-headed, gone-fishing, underachieving baseball team the Toronto Blue Jays are. Their fans who are throwing stuff at our players and everybody's players. No class. Unfortunate. It is what it is. But I got to ask you something. Well, one last thing. Charlie Sheen. He says he wants to bring back the wild thing, Ricky Vaughn, and throw out the first pitch. What do you think about that? Why shouldn't he, or should he?
Oh, I'd love the idea. That would be just a, you know what, that for anybody that's teetering between the Cavs game and the Indians game one, Charlie Sheen's out there. I think you're going to go to that Indians World Series game. That would be just something. I wonder if he's going to come out wearing the glasses. If he does get chosen, which I'm not sure he's going to. I'm not sure they're going to approve that, but that would be just a sight if he came out there in his Rick Vaughn jersey with the glasses and maybe even the mohawk.
And a Wild Thing song.
Oh, that would be an amazing moment in sports history, but also just pop culture history. Could you imagine something like that? Oh, that would be amazing. I hope they pull it off.
Well, maybe. I'm not so sure. When you talk about teetering, that's something that he'll be doing, a lot of teetering probably. He's not a teetotaler. He's a teeterer. Give me a prediction of this series before we go back to talking about the Cavs.
The series with the Indians in the World Series?
Absolutely. Give me a prediction.
I think we're going to win it. I mean, we don't know our opponent yet. I believe it's going to be the Chicago Cubs. I like our chances. I love our pitching, and I think it's our year. I think Francona is going to outmanage Madden from Chicago, and I think we're going to win it in six games.
I think the curse is real. I think the Cleveland Indians are real. They even said it on TBS. We have to start talking about them because they're for real. Indians in six.
We're not going nowhere, ESPN.
Nope. Nowhere. You bluffed us last year. This year, we called your bluff. Go Tribe! All right, it's time to talk a little Cleveland Cavalier basketball. Zach, I tell you something. We talked about them earlier. It was a lot of fun to talk about them earlier, but now we're going to go in depth. They play my Knicks on Tuesday night. I'm not liking this from a Knicks fan standpoint.
Oh, I wouldn't either. That crowd is going to be jumping. I mean, they're going to unleash the banner. They're going to show the rings. I mean, everybody's going to be there. Everybody's going to be jumping up and down. And that team is going to be so pumped to get back on the basketball court since June when they finally won it. So it's going to be pumped, and I feel bad for Knicks fans.
I would hope that you would. I feel bad for us, too. But the Knicks aren't as bad as people think they are. Cleveland, though. Cleveland, people are picking them, automatically entering them in the finals. Is that a good idea to do that in October?
I mean, it's LeBron James. Six straight finals. I think you have to pencil the Cavs in unless a catastrophe happens where LeBron goes down or Kyrie and Love go down. But the East is very muddied right now. And I agree, the Knicks have gotten better. They added some pieces, and some other teams have added some pieces, but LeBron James, six straight finals, I think he's going to make it seven.
I think so, too, but I would not anoint them just yet or appoint them just yet. There's some good teams out there, but let's talk about the Cavs. That's why we're here, to talk about the Cavs. J.R. Smith is now a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and those of us who live in this area, well, we saw him at Cleveland Indians games for the last month. We knew it was going to happen. But my goodness, He did not get what he wanted. Do you think that's going to affect the way he plays?
I really hope not. And, yeah, we've seen him at the Indians games, chalking it up, having a good time, maybe a couple of adult beverages. And, hey, let's just, you know, appreciate that he has his shirt on at the Indians games. But, hey, he got a four-year, $57 million contract for a 31-year-old shooting guard who has been, had an up-and-down career. So I think the number was just right. I know there was some huge contracts this summer, and some notably people like Mike Conley got paid, maybe overpaid. But, you know, for a 31-year-old shooting guard who is just really maybe great at one thing, I think it was deserving on each side. The Cavs weren't going to fold in, and either was JR and his staff and his agent and everything. And I'm glad they got it done. He's going to be in the starting lineup on Tuesday, and that's all that matters right now.
General manager LeBron James gets whatever he wants.
Absolutely.
He's got the coach that he wanted. He's got the players that he wants. And he's a happy guy. You can see that.
Oh, you can see it on his face. He loves to play with these guys, and they love to play with him. I mean, he's the ultimate kind of father figure on the team. Everybody else is out kind of partying it up and yakking it up all summer. Tristan Thompson and Kyrie Irving and I think LeBron was probably at home playing with the kids and maybe watching a movie and probably in by 9 p.m. So I think he's got everybody kind of corralled at the end of September, and they started training camp, and he was probably, hey, enough of that nonsense. We're going to play basketball, and it's an 82-game season, and you got to come correct.
And that's what they're going to do, come correct. They better come correct because everybody's coming for them. That's the joy of being a champion. Everyone comes for you. Watch out, boys. But I like what you said about LeBron. I think it's true. He kind of is the father figure. He does things then from a media standpoint that you got to love. You know, unfollowing the Cavs on Twitter, taking pictures during the season with Dwayne Wade. You got to love that stuff. It keeps us talking all year long.
It's a shrewd move, and it worked. It worked. Maybe if it didn't work, maybe some of the media would be, would still remember that. But yeah, he did unfollow them on Twitter. The thing with D Wade, and he still came out and say he really wished D Wade could have came and played with him in Cleveland. So they have a connection that's far beyond the basketball court. But the thing of it is, Tuesday he's got his team. They're defending champs, and they're going against your Knicks, and I believe they're about an 8-point favorite. We're going to see how that works out, but they should come out very energized. That crowd's going to be behind them 100%. It's just, what are they going to do after the first quarter, after the adrenaline kind of wears off and the rush of the moment kind of wears off and a basketball game actually happens?
Hopefully Derrick Rose is still playing. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that he doesn't get hurt in the first quarter of game one, and they don't get their value for this kid, because I'm a little nervous about that. Joakim Noah is another one I'm very nervous about. But it's going to be a fun basketball game. It's going to be a fun season. But rumor has it that the Cavs are going to find a backup point guard. Apparently, Kay Felder is not going to be the answer this year. They're looking on the trade market. Rumor says Jordan McRae's gone. I think that would be a bad move. They need to keep him. Remember Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love?
Absolutely.
Remember that bet? Remember that move? Now, you people who listen to my daily show already know I told everyone that was the dumbest move in NBA history. General manager LeBron James should have been fired on the spot.
Hey, I'm a big Wiggins fan, and he's coming into his third year. He's going to have to show me a little bit more. But, hey, the rings on their fingers. I don't know. I thought it was a very bad move. I didn't think Kevin Love would really fit in. He's too much of a jump shooter now. I'd like to see him down in the block a little bit more. But they got their title, and we'll see. The trial's still out, and the jury's still out on Wiggins. So I think he's got to show up a little bit more, maybe put on a little more muscle mass, and become the superstar that we all thought he was going to be coming out of Kansas.
Well, that could happen still, but I think that if they trade Jordan McRae, that's a bad move. I think trading Jordan McRae is a very bad move for a backup point guard. I would not do that. I would keep Jordan McRae and let Kyrie play 40 minutes a night. He hasn't given them a full season yet, so he owes them. I think he needs to play.
I mean, Jordan McRae, I agree a lot. He's he's been having a very good Off-season, he's averaging 14 points per game in the preseason. And this is a guy that made the D-League All-Star team last year and actually scored 61 points against the Canton Charge, my hometown. So he's definitely got some skill out there. I'd hate to lose him, but I believe there is maybe a hole behind Kyrie that we lost with Dellavedova. And it's going to need to be filled by somebody. Either LeBron's going to be playing more point, Shumpert's going to have to play some or something, because you can't play Kyrie 48 minutes a game. And he already has a little calf issue. He had to come out of the last preseason game. So it's Kyrie Irving. He's great, but you got to worry about his health.
Dirty Deli. I like Dirty Deli. I'm going to miss watching him play. I don't watch the Milwaukee Bucks play. I can't watch them. It's like watching paint dry, even though they have Giannis. I don't like that team. I don't like Jason Kidd much. Most people don't. I don't even think his ex-wives do, or his current one. But that's a different issue. You know what, though? At the end of the day, this is going to be a fun season. I think that this basketball team is awfully good. And how they match up with the Knicks? Probably pretty good. I think if you're playing FanDuel or DraftKings, you're probably looking at Kyrie Irving. You're probably looking at Derrick Rose on the cheap on FanDuel anyway. More than likely, you're going to go after the king, LeBron James, who will go out and show out. And don't forget Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis. Those guys will be in there too, and they're all at pretty good value, I think, Zach. I think if the folks want to make some cash with the Flash, then they need to take at least Carmelo Anthony, because nobody can guard him on that team, not the Cavs anyway.
Oh, absolutely not. His number's at about 8,000 right now. And compare that to LeBron's. LeBron's is at 9,300 or 9,600.
That's a lot of cheese on day one.
That is a lot day one. And, you know, how are they going to manage LeBron's minutes? That's a lot of – when you're playing daily, it's obviously a day-to-day thing. If the Cavs are blowing somebody out, LeBron's – he's going to sit in the fourth quarter. He's going to rest his legs. He's going to be taking days off. You're going to have to really monitor – LeBron, but when it's a big game, he is going to show out. He's going to be worth the money. Now, I really like that you brought up Porzingis. His number is only 6,900, and I think he's going to come out in his second year. I really look at him to mature, maybe get a little thicker, a little more muscle mass, and he's just a beast down low. So you got to think of him. Derrick Rose, I'm not a believer. I'm going to have to see him show out again. I was one of the biggest Derrick Rose fans when he came out of Memphis. Came to Chicago Bulls and just, I mean, really took over. And too bad about the injuries. He is just not fully recovered. He's had some court cases. Where's his head at? Where's his body at? I'm not trusting in Derrick Rose. I'd have to see it to believe it.
Well, I've seen him play a little bit at the beginning, and he looks healthy. Jeff Hornacek says he's going to play, and he's going to play a full complement of minutes. I like his chances. He's awfully cheap. Kyrie Irving can't play any defense. He kind of like refuses. Two seasons ago, he was okay. That's how he hurt his knee, and then he stopped playing defense. So I like Derrick Rose in this. I like Brandon Jennings as a sleeper, too. If something happens to Rose, Brandon Jennings comes in, and he's got some experience. It's a good game from the fantasy basketball standpoint, though. And it's going to be a good game from a fan standpoint, I think, too.
Oh, absolutely. And Brandon Jennings at 4,500, he can come out and still shoot the three-pointer. He's got long range. I think he's going to have to be their scorer off the bench. He's going to have to come in late in the first, early in the second quarter, and he's going to have to maybe carry them a little bit on the offensive side when Melo maybe takes a couple of breaths, maybe when Rose is hurt already or is sitting on the bench. And he's going to have to come out there and really handle the ball and be their probably main shooter. And he's still got some skill doing that. So at his number, he could come out and shoot 10 three-pointers, make 5, 6 of them, and score 20 points. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. But the Knicks are playing that triangle, I guess, or they're not playing. It depends on who you ask on what particular day. It should be an interesting basketball game. It's a great way to kick off the season. The Cavs only have, I think, 2 games this week. It should be a good week. It should be a lot of fun for you Cavs fans to watch the team that nobody believed in win a championship and get their rings and hoist that banner.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun season. And I want to ask you a couple things real quick. I got their over-under wins total here at 57.
Oh, it's time to make some cash with the Flash.
Yeah, you know it. 57, that means the final record would be 57-25. It's hard to imagine that team losing 25 games. But like I said, LeBron takes days off. You know, he doesn't want to play back-to-backs all the time, maybe on the road. And, you know, I like the over, but it's an interesting number. What do you think, Phil?
I don't think it's a good number at all. I think it's kind of on the high side. And I'll tell you why. Well, you hit one of those in the head right away. LeBron's not going to play every game. He's already been told that. We've already heard that in the media day. Tyronn Lue's going to preserve his minutes. Kyrie Irving has never played a full season as a professional or as a college athlete, probably not since the sixth grade. Kevin Love takes nights off even when he's out there playing. J.R. Smith will shoot you in one or shoot you out of one. 57 wins in a very tough Eastern Conference? That's a lot of wins. I would take the under. I still think that Cleveland obviously is going to win the championship this year. I believe they're going to go all the way, but that's too many wins. I think 54, 55 max.
Wow, that's a pretty low number in my eyes. Here's another one. They're plus 325 to win the NBA championship. That is compared to Golden State at minus 150. That means you have to pay 150 to win 100 if you take the Golden State Warriors to win it all. That is a very steep price.
That's too steep for me, too. Even though it looks as though they could, I watched them play the other night against the Lakers. I know the Lakers aren't very good, but that team, I used to think of that team, that Golden State team, as a bunch of, like a flock of peacocks. And I remember when I was covering the finals and I tweeted out a picture of a flock of peacocks and I said, the Warriors have arrived at the queue. They didn't like that very much. But the reality is they strut a lot. Now with Kevin Durant, they're going to strut more. When I watch them play the Lakers, now I'm convinced of it. They might be a very good regular season team, but here's what I want to caution you on. Kevin Durant, when he was with Oklahoma City Thunder last year, had a 3-1 lead against the Golden State Warriors and choked. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green had a 3-1 lead against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA final, and they choked. They lost their series. Kevin Durant joined them. What does that tell you about Kevin Durant and the Warriors? Two stars, they've got four stars, who between them blew two of the biggest leads ever in NBA history, and now they're all trying to win one together.
It's really amazing. You think about it, just like you stated, Oklahoma City blew a 3-1 lead, then the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead. It's like they passed it on, and then Durant had a very big decision, and he decided to choose the team that had just won 73 games. They were 73-9 and were one game away from the championship. And it made me really step back and think what was really going on with him. Obviously,
his belly is as yellow as the Golden State Warriors jersey.
Yeah, but he took a lot of flack for it. And also for
and
me,
deserved. Well deserved.
For me, it just stated even bigger how great LeBron is. He did not want to match up against LeBron, even if he got to the finals with Westbrook, he didn't think he could match up with LeBron physically, mentally, as a team leader. You know, some people are calling it a coward move. I don't think it's any more cowardly than when LeBron went to Miami. It's a bad look unless they win. If it doesn't work out, it's going to be a catastrophe. It's going to blow up in all of their faces, and it's going to be very ugly. But in the meantime, I think they're going to play a lot of fun basketball up and down, and it's going to be interesting how it turns out this season.
Well, it should be interesting, but I don't think it's the same thing as with Miami, when LeBron went to Miami, and I'll tell you why. Miami didn't knock the Cavs out of any playoff series. That was Boston that did that. That was something that he had planned 2 years before, if you can believe what everyone's saying.
You don't think that's a little cowardly, though, that he was already 1 foot outside from the team, even though he was still wearing the jersey?
Nope. I thought it was a good business move. I thought he had to do that to win. I don't think that if he'd have stayed in Cleveland that they would have won last year. I think he matured a lot away from home. Sometimes you have to leave home. It's kind of like going to college when you're not from high school to college. You don't really realize how grown up you are until you go back home and your mother and father are telling you what to do again. I think that was the same thing for him. He never had a chance to go away, and he wanted to go away with his buddies. Nothing wrong with that. I hooted on him for it. I hooted on him again on my 1,000th show, my daily show, my last night in Greece, I hooted on him for going back to Cleveland. I said, what is he doing? He's ruining his legacy. But now I understand it better. And I think he's in the place he needs to be in. He's never going to leave again. The prodigal son has come home. On Tuesday night, they're going to raise a banner. They're going to give out rings. And they're going to defend their championship in 2016-2017. There's my hot take for the day.
Hey, it sounds good. And Tuesday is going to be rocking in Cleveland. They're going to hoist that banner up there, and you're going to hear the crowd just go wild. I can't wait. I wish I was going to be there. I can't wait to watch it, even on TV.
And if they beat the Knicks, I'll be pissed. And if the Knicks win, I'll be thrilled, because the Knicks always show out on opening night, especially when it's Cleveland. Remember 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely do remember. And Cleveland, with LeBron, he's actually been a bad first-game player, or just on his team. They've took a couple L's the first game that you wouldn't think he would, because it's always on national TV. Everybody's loving it. His first game in Miami, they lost to Boston on opening night. So they lost on opening night, his first day back in Cleveland. So, like I said, is that energy going to be there in the second quarter? Is it going to be there at the end of the third quarter before the fourth quarter starts? Are they going to let the Knicks go on a run? Are they going to take a lead? Are the Cavs going to go out there and just dominate with the talent that they have like they should?
Well, they'll probably take leads. They'll probably go back and forth. That's how the NBA works. It's a game of lead changes. Whoever goes on the last run wins. That's the way the NBA is played. It should be a lot of fun. And it'll be a lot more fun than our next segment when we talk about the Browns.
Oh, you mean the draft? We're going to talk the draft?
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot of things about the Browns today. We'll be right back. It's time to talk about those Browns, Zach.
Let's get it in. I can't wait.
0-6. They're going to be 0-16, aren't they?
I don't think so. They're showing a lot of heart. They're going out there and showing guts. And, you know, I think Hugh Jackson can coach some football, and he hasn't lost this team. They might be 0-6, but they're trying really hard every Sunday.
But they suck.
Oh, they're terrible. They started 18 rookies last week. That's the most in the NFL in over 6 years. 18 rookies, think of that, out of a 53-man roster. A third of them are rookies playing in their first season, their first couple months of the NFL. And they're only losing, you know, they only lost by 2 points. They were close, but no cigar.
Close, but no cigar, yeah. Close, but no cigar. It's the story of the Cleveland Browns' life and the life of the fans, the dog pound. What happened to this franchise to be so bad? I mean, just downright awful.
A lot of bad luck. A lot of bad coaching decisions. I think it really starts with the ownership, the front office, and it trickles down. You look at some of the great organizations in the NFL, New England, Pittsburgh, Green Bay. They have fundamentals in the front office that trickle down throughout their system, throughout their GM, and onto their coach, and then onto their players. And I think it's just they need to get the right guys in there. They might not. I think they have the right head coach, though. I really like the head coach.
The Hugh Jackson's great, but he doesn't have much to work with. They have been entertaining, though. The player that I like a lot, and I do a lot of fantasy football like you do, I like Terrell Pryor a lot. He came out of nowhere for a lot of people, but if you watch the exhibition games in the preseason, he's the only deep threat they have. He's the only threat they have to catch a ball, at least right now.
I mean, the skill's there. Even when he was playing quarterback, even when he was at Ohio State, you know, 6'5", 245 pounds, can run a sub 4.440. Could he run routes? You know, he showed flashes last season, and I never thought too much of it. Then this preseason, something else changed. His routes got tighter. He was tracking the ball better, and he made a lot of plays in the preseason. Came out week one, and he was the number one. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. Last week, 9 catches, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's the only weapon they have outside. And every other team knows it, and he's still getting open, still being productive. And it's one of the only bright spots on this team right now.
He is the bright spot on this team. Not one of. He is the only bright spot on this team. The rest of them are rubbish. Or are they?
I believe more I'm leaning towards rubbish, but hey, you got to be happy with your third round pick in quarterback Cody Kessler.
He's having a good year.
He's having a good year. Nobody thought he could play in the league, including myself.
Nor I.
No, I mean, last week, 336 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. I mean, that's a pretty good stat line.
And Tennessee's defense sucks.
They're not that terrible. They're not the worst. They're not New Orleans.
I had them last week in DFS, so that's why they suck.
Well, yeah, in DFS they suck last week because everybody wanted them and everybody thought they would tear up Cleveland. And guess what? Cleveland hasn't come out there and just turned the ball over. Everybody's wanting to pick a defense against them in daily fantasy, and it's not working out. Baltimore, they didn't. I mean, Baltimore had a safety. Other than that, nothing really. But each week they're being just
they're competing.
Not, yeah, they're competing. They're not turning the ball over. They're giving themselves a chance to win in the fourth. They're just not following through. And Kessler's the start of it. When he's healthy, he's had 856 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, only 1 interception for a rookie quarterback. That's pretty good. You're looking at Jared Goff, who was the number one pick in the draft. He can't even get on the field. And I'm not saying, you know, Kessler could go beat out Case Keenum in L.A., but he's proven something that nobody thought he could do, and that's a little bit of an accomplishment at least.
Now, let me ask you this. Josh McCown probably will be back for their seventh or their eighth game of the season. Does he start, or do they keep Cody Kessler as the starter?
To me, if I'm the coach, I keep Kessler in, see what you got with this kid. You're going to have a very, 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 very high draft pick next season. You're going to be looking for a future quarterback. You want to make sure that you see everything you want to see out of Kessler. You know what you're going to get out of McCown. He's going to dump the ball off. He's going to throw the Barnage 20 times. He's a pro. He's a multi, you know, over 10 years pro.
He's a game manager, we call them.
He's a game manager, but guess what? We don't need a game manager. You know, they're not going to win. We're not going to make the playoffs. You know, if they could have traded him, I think they would have. Nobody really wanted him. He's a great backup quarterback. He's not the future. You want to find the future of the Cleveland Browns. Is it Cody Kessler? I don't think so, but let's see what the kid has. He's smart. He's smart with the ball. He spreads it around. I don't love his arm strength. I don't love his arm talent, but he's proved a lot to me, and I think he has a little more to prove, and you never really know what you got until you get to see him, so I think you got to keep Kessler in there.
Okay, that's fair enough. McCown, though, we know what we're going to get, too, and he was a leader last year. The thing is the team, you could tell the difference. Like when RG3 got behind center, you could see it wasn't as lifeless, but when McCown came out there, the team had life.
He's a team guy. They rally around him. I think the team loves him. I think he might have a future, maybe even in coaching. He people really look up to him, and he goes out there, and he was getting murdered, still getting up every play. Still trying to chuck the ball.
Not like RG3.
No, RG3 gets he falls.
The wind blows, and he's on the DL for 5 weeks. Yeah,
absolutely. And
that was a great signing, by the way.
Like we all didn't see that coming.
Yeah, everybody but the Browns. See, that's where they. This is why people from outside of Cleveland, hell, even inside Cleveland, hoot on this football team and this organization. It's rotten from the top down.
The 2016 Cleveland Browns team, they were set up for failure. No matter how hard they try, this team was not going to succeed. They didn't bring back Paul Kruger. They didn't bring back Deshaun Gibson, Dante Whitner. They didn't bring back Carlos Dansby. They didn't try to sign Alex Mack, even though he signed a huge contract. They didn't try to bring back Schwartz. They didn't bring in any other free agents at all. This team was set up the draft in the 2017 draft and compete in possibly 2018. That's how the analytics work. That's how the Oakland A's got good in the 2000s, and they made a movie about it, and they think they can do that in Cleveland. I don't think that's how football works. I don't like it. The Cleveland fans don't deserve it, but this team was set up for failure from the start when they did not try to re-sign some of the decent players they had last year. And I know that team went 3-13, but Carlos Dansby can play some football. Deshaun Gibson signed a big contract down in Jacksonville. Those were good players that you could mold into a good team, and I don't agree with it.
You know what, though? What shocked me is they traded down because they didn't think Carson Wentz could play football in the NFL. They didn't think he'd be a star. And he came out on opening night and kicked their ass. That's where it is. Yeah, they can take all the who's analyzing these sabermetrics of theirs, because whoever it is needs to be fired.
Hey, I dig so deep into the draft, I can't explain it. You can probably just sense I get giddy about it. I wasn't sure on Carson Wentz, and after he destroyed Pittsburgh, I had to take a step back and be like, whoa. Last 2 weeks, he's fallen down the earth a little bit, and you know, maybe he isn't the best thing since sliced bread. We have to see a lot more out of that kid, and you have to remember a big thing with him is he was injury prone.
He's not even a half a loaf of bread.
He was injury prone in college, and guess what? He wasn't on the field. His team still went out and won the national title, even though he played in that game. They got to the national title without him. He's 6'5", 240, has a strong arm. I'm worried about his durability, and let's face it, he looked crappy last week. He didn't look as good as Cody Kessler looked. I know, Cody Kessler played against the Washington Redskins. He looked better than Carson Wentz did, so I think some people are jumping off the Carson Wentz bandwagon. Maybe not.
I'm not one of them.
Maybe not deserving or not. I looked at that Philadelphia Eagles team as a top 10 pick easily that the Browns were going to receive for that trade. Now, they came out 3-0. Everybody thought they were going to make the playoffs. Now they're 3-2. Let's see what they're really going to do. I think they're going to fall back to around average, and I think they're about a 6-7 win team. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team, and the Browns are going to have their pick, and I think it's going to be in the early teens.
Well, that's fair enough. But we're a long way off from the draft, Zach. We have a game against the Bengals coming up. The Cleveland Browns take on the Cincinnati Bengals, in-state rivalry. The Bengals are a 10-point favorite. I don't even know what the over-under is. I guess I don't even care. What do you do with this football game if you're going to do something illegal and bet if you're outside of Las Vegas? What do you do? Do you lay the 10? Or do you take the 10 and go with the Cleveland Browns?
Well, it is in Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati, Ohio. The 10 points, hey, the Browns have been playing hard. Last year, I mean, the Browns were outscored 68-13 in their two games against the Bengals, which that's going to say, oh, jump all over the Bengals. Take the Bengals, they're going to destroy them. Hey, the three seasons before that, they split 3-3, even though they had terrible teams. So they have been playing Cincinnati pretty tough, except for last year. 10 points is a lot in the NFL, Phil. You know that. These games usually come down to the fourth quarter, and one or two plays can make the difference, especially against the line. You know, if I'm a gambler, and I might possibly be, you know, the 10 points is hard to pass, and I think the Browns will probably keep it interesting, and you're not going to be able to tell until the end of the game, I believe.
I'm leaving that one alone. Those big point spreads, they make me nervous. I don't care for those.
Also, the over-under is 45. So
yeah, see, so
right in the middle.
So what you have basically is you have a team that's projected to score 21 points, the Bengals. That's not enough. They're not going to beat the team. What are they going to score? In order for them to beat 10, it'd be 31.
You might have something right there. I think I like that under. The Bengals are only scoring 18.2 points per game.
Yeah,
it's almost
Cleveland's
amazing.
Defense is like the fifth worst in the
NFL.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the Browns are scoring 18.9, but they're giving up 29.6. So you got to look. Something's going to give there. The Bengals are either going to finally show up, have a nice consistent offense. I mean, you know, what's really going on with them? What is the definition of their offense other than A.J. Green?
It sucks.
Yeah, you know, is it Geo? Is it Jeremy Hill in the backfield? Who's the number two? Brandon LaFell? I mean, they lost Marvin Jones. Look what he's doing in Detroit. Mohamed Sanu, he's having a really good season down in Atlanta. And, you know, who's going to step up? Tyler Eifert's still hurt for them. I don't think he's going to play this week. I'm not sure when he is going to play. So the Bengals are a mystery. They're 2-4. And boy, do they need a win, but they don't need the win as much as the 0-6 Cleveland Browns. I think they want to come out and beat their division rival, and they're going to come out and play hard. Are they going to cover the 10? I don't know. Are they going to win? I doubt it. But I know Hugh Jackson, he's going to have them playing very hard.
Perhaps he will. That's what they miss, they being the Bengals. They miss Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson calling those plays. You know, people don't realize that Hugh Jackson is an amazing offensive coordinator. You don't see it with the Browns because the Browns suck. When he gets some players behind him, watch out. I think he's going to be all right. Last week I took the Bengals, Zach.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, I didn't say cover. I threw away my parlay. You know, I hit 11-teamer the week before. I was on fire.
Ooh.
It ruined me. Ruined me this week. I got to tell you, I'm leaving this game alone from a betting standpoint only because I don't trust the Bengals. I really don't trust the Cleveland Browns. And I would probably want to watch that game and just laugh instead of cry when I lose my money because it could go either way. I don't like the over-under either. It could go over or Cincinnati could bury them in a shoebox again. You never know. But I like the DFS opportunities, the daily fantasy sports opportunities in this game, though.
Oh, absolutely. There's a bunch of them. Andy Dalton has a very low number of only 6,000. And going against a defense that made Marcus Mariota look like the new coming age of Aaron Rodgers in his prime or something. I believe he had 25, 30 fantasy points, depending on what scoring system you're using, on 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Had 60 yards rushing. That's something to look for. So I think Andy Dalton, he's going to get out there and chuck it around. It's going to feel good for him to maybe finally get some production out there because he's been struggling this season. The yards have been there. The touchdowns have not been there. I mean, he has right here only 6 touchdowns in 6 games. Can you believe that, Phil? That in this day of age in the NFL for a starting quarterback to only average a touchdown a game, that's terrible. It really is.
Well, he's had some bad luck. A.J. Green's going to go off because there's nobody to cover him. This is the thing we have to look out for. This is why you want to leave this game alone from a betting standpoint because it could hurt you. But in a daily fantasy, Dalton is going to hit this kid left and right. Green's going to be good. Now, I also happen to like Giovanni Bernard. He got twice as many snaps as Hill did last week and the week before. So I like those guys, and I like Terrell Pryor if he plays. If he doesn't, I'm going to go with Andrew Hawkins because he's cheap, and he won me money last week. So we always like people who win cash for the flash.
Absolutely, bravo. Everybody likes to win money. I think TP is going to get out there and play this week. And
I'd like to see him play quarterback.
I think they do need to use him in the Wildcat more. I think that was really successful against
great
Miami.
Great for fantasy numbers, too.
Absolutely. I think it was great against Miami, and I think they kind of came off of it a little bit because I think they realized what a star that TP can be, and he's the only sunshine they have on the team. They don't want to get him hurt yet.
Sunshine in a bag of manure.
Yeah, you know it. But I like how you put Gio out there. His number is only 4,800. He's averaging 5 catches a game. So, you know, the PPR standpoint, he's going to get you points just at that.
DraftKings!
You know it. You know it. And, you know, his yard per carry is not great. He's sharing the backfield with Jeremy Hill. And if the game gets out of hand a little bit, I think Jeremy Hill might take some of that workload away because they're going to be grinding the clock around and trying to end the game soon. So look out for maybe a Jeremy Hill appearance on a short touchdown, or maybe even 2. He usually gets touchdowns in 2s. That's Denver this year, and then he'll go 3 games without one. But the fantasy options here are almost endless because there are a lot of cheap numbers like Brandon LaFell that are going to show out because, you know, Dalton doesn't have anybody else to throw to. You're talking about Hawkins, you know, Kessler doesn't have anybody else to throw to. He doesn't really utilize Barnage a lot. You know, is Crow going to come out there and have a big game? I don't think so. He struggled the last 2 weeks after having a really strong, you know, start of the season. So maybe a Duke Johnson appearance. Maybe they have to dink and dunk to him a little more because they're trailing. So there's a lot of interesting fantasy options in this game.
I'm a big fan of Isaiah Crowell, though. I have him in my standard season-long league. He does pretty well. This could be one of those games where he rolls, but the problem I have is that there's a very good chance that they're going to be coming from behind. So Duke Johnson looks like the better back. I think that this team, the Browns, I think they suck. But we've already told you about 2 great Cleveland teams. So 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right, Zach?
2 out of 3 is not bad, Phil. I mean, if you have 2 world champions and an 0-16 Cleveland Browns team, I think the city of Cleveland will take that every single year. But in the same aspect, you know, it's a football town. It's a football state. The Hall of Fame is in this state, and the Cleveland Browns are pathetic every single year. And on national TV, that we're looked at as a joke. One of these days, one of these years, they're going to have to get it turned around. I don't know if it's this front office. The analytics in football, I'm going to have to see it to believe it, and I'm not seeing it yet. You're not going to see with wins. Like I said, this team was set up for failure. I cannot state that enough. They did not try to bring any veteran back. They did not try to bring in any outside veteran, and they're trying to win it with just first-year players with a third-round quarterback that can barely throw 25 yards on a spiral because his arm strength isn't the greatest. You know, they're set up for failure, but they're going out there and playing hard, and they're going to get a win one of these weeks. They're not going 0-16, but
they're going 0-16.
I don't think so. I think they're going to get one or two at least. They're playing hard. Something crazy can happen. Hey, they should have beat Baltimore. They should have beat Miami. They should have beat Washington. They got destroyed by New England, but so did Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati ran into that buzzsaw last week and asked them how they feel. Burfett should have been suspended. I mean, that was ridiculous, the hit he had on Martellus Bennett. And they're a dirty team, and, you know, I'd like to see Cleveland kind of give it back to him a little bit this week. I'm not sure it's going to happen, though. I've got hope.
I hope so, for your sake. I don't want to see you cry next week. I'm Phil Nasons.
I'm Zach Zander.
And we want to thank you for listening to the Cleveland Sports Report.